Welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast 44. We are covering the Tour Championship on the PGA Tour and the Portugal Masters on the European Tour. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. I'm Steve Bamford, PGA Tour preview at Golf Betting System, and with me we have European Tour expert Paul Williams and resident podcast pundit Barry O'Hanrahan returns. Good evening, chaps.
Evening, gents.
Evening, guys.
GolfBettingSystem.co.uk is our website. Twitter handles, I'm at Bamford Golf, Paul at Golf Betting, Barry at A Good Talk Golf. We're available on Podbean, iTunes, TuneIn for Android, Spotify, Stitcher, Player FM and Podtail. There's hundreds, well not hundreds maybe, tens of ways, channels in terms of getting our podcast. Naturally subscribe, follow the podcast and spread the word. Right, there's so much to pack in, chaps. We don't seem to have done a podcast. I know we did one, Paul, didn't we, for a couple of weeks ago. Barry wasn't available. Is that right?
Yeah. No, that was the one.
No, we didn't even do that, did we? Technical problems.
We had technical problems at the 11th hour.
We had Boston on finishing on a month. It's been a nightmare. But we're back to usual, listeners. So there's going to be podcasts ongoing. Podcast this week, and we're going to also release a podcast next week for the Ryder Cup, of course. What can we share with the listeners? Shall we share your run of good form, Paul, on the European Tour? That's a good starting point.
Yeah, it's been going all right the last few weeks, hasn't it? We didn't get to talk about Matt Wallace, did we? And the fantastic final round that he put together to win, what was it, 3 weeks ago now, wasn't it?
Yeah. But,
I know you and I don't, I can't remember if you were on him or not, Barry, but I know Steve and I were on him quite heavily, and to see him come through and do what he did over those last few holes, having seemingly kind of played himself out of the tournament early on in the final round, was incredible to watch. Absolutely incredible.
He must have been millions in running, because he was so far off.
Absolutely. Even when he got to the turn, and there was the par four, the drivable par four, and the par five, and he went bogey par on those two. And even at that point, any kind of lingering hope you had was virtually extinguished. But then, he was on fire, wasn't he, for the rest of that round? And then birdied both the playoff holes, and yeah, absolutely incredible. Yeah, I mean, usually, you know, we all know how golf betting goes, and often, you know, you're sitting on the other side of some kind of performance like that, but to be on board with it is truly exhilarating. That's why we do this mad game, isn't it?
When he made that birdie on 18 in regulation, you just got the feeling, didn't you? And you kind of well, we know Lee Westwood of old, don't we? And none of the putts were getting to the hole, so you know. Is it Jigger Thompson? He was right in the mix, but inexperienced, no card guaranteed for next year. And was it Stephen
Brown, yeah.
Who I know that you've got lined up potentially for a tournament in the near future, so we'll keep that under our hats, but you've got an idea on that one. But yes, he then, at no point did I really think throughout the playoff that he wasn't going to actually win it.
No, he just had that momentum. He just had that bit between his teeth, didn't he? And he just wanted to win it. He just absolutely had to win it. So that kind of last gasp attempt to impress Thomas Bjorn, which we all know fell flat on his face in the end. But he couldn't have possibly done any more whatsoever, could he? That was as good as it was going to get to round a tournament off. And oh, he's shown us what he's all about. You know, we already know he's a winner. He's a born winner because of the record he's got. You know, even these wins that he's got on the Alps Tour and three European Tour wins now. Yeah, they've all been at a relatively low level, but the guy knows how to get over the line. He absolutely knows how to get over the line.
So from there, we then went. We went to, help me out. Oh, it's Kranz, wasn't it, for the Amiga European Masters?
Yeah.
And you had Lucas Bjerregaard.
He put together another flying final round as well, didn't he? From a decent position. And he was my biggest bet that week as well. And that was, you've gone from kind of the exhilaration of Matt Wallace producing that final round to seeing someone like Lucas put together what should have been an event-winning round, and it just got pipped by Matt Fitzpatrick, who did effectively did a Wallace on us, didn't he? He birdied the last and got the job done in the playoff. And you go from the highs to the lows, and then on to last week where our Chinese friend Mr. Wu produced the goods at 125-1. Lovely little touch, that one.
Your profit and loss, that is just shocking.
Yeah, it's looking good for the year now. So, yeah, it's getting it's well over 350 up. So, yeah, it'd be nice to get it close to 500 by the end of the year, which would be round about 100% return on investment if I can get there to 500 by the end. So that's the target. Let's see if we can get.
And you've got a half-decent record in this Portugal Masters, haven't you?
Yeah, so...
Have you snared the winner here?
Yeah, Lucas Beauregard won last year, didn't he? And I was on him at 66s, which was really nice because I back Lucas quite a lot. I rate him as a player, and I'd kind of singled out this event as one that he really had a decent chance of winning, and it was great to see him get over the line. And 66s, given that he had come off of a relatively strong performance at Cran's the week before, it was this time last year. Well, no, 2 weeks before, in fact. 66s, I thought, was an outstanding price, which we got early doors. And I know he went off a little bit shorter than that, but he put together a really assured performance last year. Naturally, he's been absolutely slaughtered in terms of price this year. So you're kind of getting a 16, maybe a little bit of 18 to one about him. But
interesting tongue with that Portugal Master. We'll cover that in a short while. Yeah. I know from previous winners, just looking at previous winners, it tends to be a sort that have actually done something at a higher level that can then turn up here and shoot the required low score to win. So that's something to... And with juicy winning prices, I know that's
certainly decent prices.
Yeah, a lot of listeners will be looking forward to your views on that one. Mm. What did we make of it? Let's bring Barry in. What did you make of the captain's pick choices from the two respective captains for the Ryder Cup?
Almost zero surprises. Mm. Like no drama, really.
It was like, Fury. I mean, Fury. That was that. They were all locks, weren't they? Effectively,
yeah.
There was just no argument in it at all. And no. I mean, the more you looked into the information, the details and the stats between Finau and Schofield, it was just it wasn't even a contest. That was the only real one that was being debated at all. And and of course the Golf Channel trying to make something of Keegan Bradley's win, which was actually really impressive, very very well finished off by him. We all saw Keegan Bradley playing very well recently, but I don't think anybody thought he was actually going to go and win a tournament. So
well, he kept throwing in stupid rounds, didn't he? Really crazy low rounds, and then go backwards. But this was the stat from last week, Barry, that really just blew my mind. Keegan Bradley, first for putts per GIR at the BMW, 1.54. Yeah. I mean, that's not Keegan Bradley.
That's not Keegan.
He won that with a putter.
Yeah, amazing.
He's an interesting player. Just looking at the Tour Championship this week, if there was one player that you would say is incredible value, not that I've tipped him, but one that kind of follows we have the Horschel model, don't we, to win this?
Yeah.
50-1 on Keegan Bradley. That's not a bad price, is it?
No, he'd be going in with extreme confidence. The thing I find very interesting is that it seems that in broad terms, himself and Webb Simpson have kind of figured out the non-anchored putting stroke.
Yeah.
At roughly around the same time. It's coincidental. It'll make you wonder why if they've been talking, if they've gone to the same person just to get
winning? Did you eyeball how he's holding the putter?
No, I didn't focus in too much.
Because I know with Webb, it was the claw grip. it was he got told that the Players' Championship the year before last, and from that point on, he started making progress with it. And if you look at Bradley, actually, and this is it, there has been some small improvements. You know, it's not regular, but you're not going to get that, are you? All of a sudden, he's putting like I think at Glen Abbey a few outings ago, he putted quite nicely. I'm just looking at my statistics. Yeah, he was fifth for putting average in Canada, and he was also 14th at Ridgewood. So, you know, you could see that the putter was warming. But yes, I mean, 110-1. That was a bit of a shock win, wasn't it? Especially when I think a lot of, you know, hundreds or if not thousands of punters were on rows at 14s.
Clearly he got the word, didn't he, that he'd become world number one as he was going into the playoffs. So
I think his caddy told him that, I heard. I mean, that's kind of, I can see why he did it, but I can also, you know, you can also,
it's just going to fry your mind right that minute.
Exactly, the case to not, you know, tell him. It can either spur him on to the win, or as it happened, it totally fried his head. I mean, it was, you just don't expect Justin Rose to make that mistake in regulation, though.
No.
From the middle of the fairway where he was, you just don't expect that at all.
What are your views in terms of the picks on the European side? I mean, it was effectively, looking back, six into four spots, wasn't it? So, you know, and it's Rafa and it's Matt that have missed out effectively on the European tour. What's your read on it?
I think Rafa's the one who could probably count himself the most unlucky. As well as Matt Wallace has done, the events he's won aren't super high profile.
No.
You'd also be putting another rookie into the team of quite a few rookies, even though a lot of the rookies we have are very high profile and proven players already. With all we know about the Ryder Cup, you do need that bit of experience. The rookie factor, as we've said, isn't as huge a thing these days as it was in, you know, say 20 years ago. But I think there's, you know, a lot's been said about Sergio and what he does for the team spirit and the team environment, and I guess that's the crucial thing there. You know, there's going to be a lot of rhetoric about how strong the US team is, and having somebody of, you know, Sergio's stature and what he can do in the team room is a boost that, you know, Bjorn has deemed very important for the European side.
He was quite predictable in the end, wasn't it? And, you know, he clearly did go entirely with experience over the rookies. But, I follow the European Tour far closer than the PGA Tour. You know, I've followed Matt Wallace through his wins, and there's just something about him. He'll get into teams in the future. Clearly he was disappointed, and clearly he felt that he'd done everything he possibly could. And I think he did do everything he possibly could to put his case to Bjorn. I'd hope he gets taken along in some capacity to get some experience of it. And I think you'll see him in future teams for years to come. But I was a bit disappointed for him. I must say, I thought that, given the form that Garcia has been in, and, you know, this little niggling injury doubt over Stenson, and perhaps that's absolutely nothing, but I thought he was a little unlucky. But so did he. I think if Cabrera Bello had converted that chance he had back at
Boston, leading, wasn't he?
And he was a fantastic position.
And then four bogeys on the back nine.
Absolutely, you know, and it's those little things that you could say, well, actually, you know, had he done that, then he's really asking the question. And that didn't happen. And, you know, the flip side of that is when Wallace was asked the question, he produced the goods, you know, reeling off birdie after birdie after birdie. And, wherever you are, whatever tournament you're playing, if you can get into the mindset where you're producing that kind of run, they're the kind of runs that win matches in the Ryder Cup.
I had a quick look, because we had a lot of discussions about it on our Facebook group, didn't we? Golf Betting System Facebook group for listeners. We've got a group on there, knowledgeable golf punters and people that really enjoy their golf. I just worked it out quickly. If you looked at the official world golf ranking points that Wallace has accrued since the end of January, and you compare them to Sergio and you compare them to Henrik Stenson, he's won more points in you know, very low grade events.
Yeah.
It shows the ability the boy's got, and it also shows how badly Stenson and Garcia have actually been playing on a world stage where, you know, there's masses of ranking points swilling around.
Just to throw something into the spanner in the works here, although Stenson and Garcia's form has been suspect to say the least for a large part of the season, do you think an American going up against Garcia or Stenson would be less or more scared than if they were up against Matt Wallace?
Yeah, fair point.
It's a difficult one, isn't it? Because one thing Wallace can do is he can putt. You know, he's a great driver of the ball, but he's a fantastic putter as well.
What's one thing Sergio can't do at the moment?
You know, if you've got a guy who's reeling off 10, 12, 15, 20 footers against you, and then you've got another guy who's missing 4 footers, you know, I don't know. It's a difficult one. I hope that Sergio proves me and a number of other people wrong and really comes out and plays well, but we'll see.
Look, it's.
I hope he's not nursed and doesn't play, because if that's the, you know, he plays one or two matches, and if that's the case, you know, it's kind of almost
backfired, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's always as much fun as it is doing Ryder Cup preview talks. It's even more fun discussing the aftermath on both sides of the thing. So just get ready. The next few weeks will be fun.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to it, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be a great event. Always is. Mm. Should we talk Tour Championship? Let's talk Tour Championship. Mm. Top 30 in the FedEx Cup. Clearly an absolutely rammed field full of top quality in terms of the world elite. Rose is the favourite this week, or joint favourite, with Dustin Johnson and Rory McIlroy. The best price you will get on those three is 9-1. Then we've got the likes of defending FedEx Cup champion Justin Thomas at 12s, Tiger Woods, who's being backed in at 14s, Koepka at 14s, DeChambeau and Matsuyama and Fowler and Tony Finau at 20-1. The rest 25-1 and bigger. The likes of Molinari, Fleetwood, Jason Day. You know, just reading those names, it's clearly a very, very exciting event. Eastlake, one of those courses, I think. I do like to watch a tournament around here. It's the kind of course where the best in the world have to work for their birdies. They have to work for their scores. In terms of course conditions this week, we're looking in terms of... It's going to be totally different from what we saw at Ridgewood. It's going to be totally different from what we saw last time out at Ronnemink. I think it's going to be quite firm and fast. I think it's going to play to how organisers want it to play, a little bit firmer on the greens, you know, 12 and a half stimp. We're talking mini Verde, ultra dwarf Bermuda grass greens. They're fast, they're undulating. It's a Donald Ross design. It's also had a makeover from the Open Dr. Rhys Jones. So it's a tough, tough golf course. And Ross designs, by their nature, tiered greens, tiered usually back to front. You read various player interviews, downhill putts, even 10, 12 footers here are a beast. They don't become birdie opportunities. You're putting for par even from 10, 12, 14 feet downhill here. And that starts to frustrate certain players. And you read a lot of interviews here. It's a real strategic shot makers golf course where you've got to be particularly patient to make your scores, because it's very, very easy to make a lot of bogeys on the golf course, you know, which stretches out circa 7,400 yards as a par 70. So it's not an easy golf course. for me, and I've, you know, looking into this, you know, winning scores here. Xander won here at 12 under last year. McIlroy 12 under in 16, 9 under for Spieth in 2015. Horschel was 11 under in 14. The lowest we've seen recently was Stenson on a course that was quite soft on the Sunday. He shot 13 under. So that just shows you the kind of target.
It's all
score.
Quite consistent, yeah, though, isn't it?
Very consistent. I think the course
can
be managed.
There's not much variation.
No, I think the course can be managed. You know, they can turn up the the wick in terms of the greens if they need to. The rough can be particularly gnarly around here. And we're talking Zoysia grass again this week. And as we know, a lot of players don't particularly get on with Zoysia grass. And it's a grass that a lot of players that grew up in the south or the southeast of America play quite well on. So Floridians, Carolina, Georgian, you know, players who have grown up playing golf courses with Zoysia grass, you know, even Tennessee, Louisiana, they do tend to have a very good record around here. So that's something potentially to build in. It's difficult, isn't it? It's always difficult on a tournament which is 30 players to get value in terms of odds. One thing that's worth highlighting to listeners this week, this has never happened at the Tour Championship before, but Paddy Power have gone a genuine six places each way, a fifth the odds at the Tour Championship this year, which for a 30-man field is a phenomenal offer. Yes. 20% of the field, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's generally four places and a quarter, isn't it? Or it has been for a number of years. So
absolutely.
To push it through to six and a fifth is, that's pretty strong.
And so really interestingly, like, their prices themselves aren't actually that bad. You'd think that their prices would be chopped to shreds, but they're reasonably competitive.
Well, one of my tips of the three is best price at the moment with them. So you're getting best price and six places each way, 50 odds. It's a no-brainer, isn't it? So that's certainly worth looking at in terms of this week's punting. What kind of angle would you guys be taking on this tournament? I mean, I tell you where I've headed with this, and you can kind of see it. I'll just read you through the winning prices. I mean, last year was an absolute brainstormer in terms of just completely blowing trends, but Schauffele was 100-1. McIlroy won this at 13-2 in 16. Spieth at 9-1. But then we got the likes of Horschel at 25s, Stenson at 16s, Snedeker at 40s. If you actually look at the average of the last eight renewals, it's 33-1 the winning price here. Last four renewals, so since they turned the seasons on their head, 35-1 is the average winning price. So potentially there's a little bit of value to be had with players lower down the actual market, if you want to go down that route. And that's something I've kind of tapped into. But something really obvious just came to me when I was thinking about this last week on holiday and just thinking through, you know, how this tends to play out. 15th, 16th, 37th, 33rd, 13th, 42nd and 20th. That's the incoming form from the BMW Championship across seven of the last eight winners. There's not a top 10 in there.
It's not exactly sparkling, is it?
The one that goes against that was our friend Billy Horschel, Billy Ho, who went second at Boston, first at the BMW, and then won this at Eastlake to win the FedEx Cup and the 10 million. So it has been done. Trends do get broken. But when you're seeing seven of the past eight, none of whom have got a top 10, and you're seeing a lot of the, you know, the big names up there, Justin Rose, Rory McIlroy coming off a top four, Tiger Woods coming off a decent finish at the BMW. It's not filling me with enthusiasm to back them.
No, and they're skinny old prices as well at the top, aren't they? Skinny prices indeed. I think given the nature of the course, it's a tough, tricky technical test, isn't it? And it kind of lends itself more to the more experienced or the more kind of major adept type players, I think, is the way I'd see it. Those who've got the mentality, experience, or potential maybe to win majors or multiple majors in their career. That's the kind of person I see producing the goods here.
If you look at the if you look at where players have done well, and again, Xander from last year kind of blows everything out of the water, except if you think where Xander did play well last year, it was at the US Open, wasn't it? And we can all argue about, Erin Hills and was it a genuine US Open, blah, blah, blah. But actually, he finished fifth at Erin Hills, and this year he backed up, didn't he, with sixth at Shinnecock. So he's a US Open-style player. McIlroy's won at Congressional. Jordan Spieth won at Chambers Bay. Billy Horschel, his only major top 10, was at Merion in the US Open that Justin Rose won. Henrik Stenson, he's finished fourth and ninth in US Opens recently. Schneds, we know that Schnedeker's got a decent record in US Opens. And you even go back clearly to Jim Furyk, who's a US Open champion. So if there's one major title that winners around here have got, format, it's the US Open. And I know when I've looked at this, I've built that into my calculations. I'll tell you who I've gone with. For a little bit of value, I could not resist this morning, Bubba Watson at 50-1.
Yeah, it's a good price.
If you think of Bubba, he has in the past, but way back in the past, got a US Open top five, I think it was. At Torrey Pines, from memory, somewhere like that. We also know with Bubba, he's got a particularly strong association with Georgia. Clearly, this is East Lake Golf Club, played in East Atlanta, Georgia, and two wins at the Masters, and he's also got two top fives around here. And another route into this that I liked, and when you looked into this, strokes gained off the tee in the BMW previous. Schauffele was 10th at the BMW. McIlroy was 7th, Horschel was 13th, and Stenson was 7th in the 70-man field at the BMW. And if I just look from last week, McIlroy was... from the BMW. These weeks and holidays are getting away, don't they? Strokes gained off the tee. McIlroy was 1st, Tony Finau 2nd, DJ 3rd, Patrick Cantlay 4th, DeChambeau 5, Koepka 6, Rose 8, Bubba Watson 9. So he's hitting the ball well off the tee. It's a shot shaper's golf course, ball strikers, and his putter was quite warm for Bubba last week. I think he was in the top 15 for putts per GIR. And if you actually look at him, shot one over in the first round, so and at the BMW Championship, that's a no-no. You've got to be on the pace right from the off, like Bradley was, like Rose was. But then from there, he shot 14 under. Or 15 under across the final 3 days. And I know that he shot 131 on the weekend, which was only a shot shy of the very best, who were shooting 10 under 130 across the weekend at Aronimink. So he's clearly playing some nice golf, Bubba. We know that he can play on Zoysia. He's got a couple of top fives here. He just grabbed me as a player. Just to run you through that, Bradley, Horschel, Simpson and Hadwin were shot 10 under across the weekend at Aronimink. And then you had Rose, McIlroy, Woods, Fleetwood, Molinari, Watson, DeChambeau, Koepka, Johnson all shot 9 under 131 across the weekend at Aronimink. So I just think Bubba is totally and utterly overpriced yet again at 50-1 for a man that's won 3 times on the PGA Tour this year.
Yeah. No, I think you look down that bracket and you've obviously got the favourites right at the very top, and then you've got the next kind of swathe of guys around about the 20-1 point. And then you jump down to these guys who are around about 50-1, and there's a few. I mean, it's a quality field, isn't it? So you're going to, you could probably build a partial case for most of these guys, but Bubba does stick out.
Why would Paul Casey, and the way that he's playing at the moment, be 40-1? And Bubba Watson was 50-1 this morning.
Yeah.
That doesn't compute for me, even though I know Paul Casey's got a decent record here.
No.
So, Bubba for me, that's sure. I know around that price point, Barry, there's a couple of players that you're interested in again this week. Do you want to go through?
So, like I said, for the last few weeks, no surprise, I'm still on Woodland. This is like last chance saloon for him to make me happy.
Can't let him go, Barry, can you?
I can't now. I mean, crikey.
I've heard of Tony Finau truthers, but Gary Woodland truthers. That's really out there. That's like being a Matt Every truther.
My tinfoil hat is very heavy and compressing my vertebrae in my neck. Gary Woodland, he's 10th per your rolling rankings, Steve. He's 10th in driving accuracy. He's 4th in greens and regulation. His problem is putting. Now, he has one win on tour on Bermuda, so that's, I've got that going for me. And for the season, he's 19th in strokes gained tee to green. And this is my angle this week, is tee to green. Absolute quality ball strikers. And because the scoring round here is never really deep, I don't think you need to be an unbelievable putter and be making a shed load of birdies. You just need to make your fair share. So hoping Gary can up his putting to a somewhat reasonable week to make it happen. But, you know, happy to take him on at, what did I get him at? 45-1, 6 places with Paddy Power in a 30-man field. That kind of makes sense for me. He's been doing all the right things to make his game go to the next level. Putting coach, mind coach. So it's, you know, I'm happy to take on that bet. Again.
Yeah, it's been kind of flattering to deceive, isn't it? Because he's been getting into some positions and, you know, at various points in rounds or various points in tournaments, he's been, you know, on the fringes of doing something special and not quite converting. But, you know, you could have said the same about Keegan Bradley, and, you know, we all know what happened a couple of weeks back. So,
well, here's hoping.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Of the short, in that kind of mid-price bracket, I had three that I had paid particular attention to. One was Bryson DeChambeau, one was Webb Simpson, and one was Tommy Fleetwood. And I know that I haven't included Tommy Fleetwood, but I know that you have, Barry.
I did.
He has got a very good fit for this event. That's undoubted. And we were talking about that US Open link, weren't we?
Yeah.
Mr. US Open, Tommy Fleetwood, yeah?
Yeah, the ability just to grind it out a bit. His consistency is amazing. Like, I'm just looking at his PGA Tour page. He's had one miscut all year. And anything else he's played in, you know, it looks like its worst is a top 35. So he's not fading away on the weekend. He's there. His game is just at another level. And even though his price, I backed him on the exchange at 30s just to get a little bit, just to get a couple more points on him. But it would still be a slight surprise if he won. You know, not quite to the extent of Schofield last year, but, you know, he hasn't won on the PGA Tour, so his biggest win is the Open de France last year, the Rolex event, and he just seems to be bubbling under for that PGA Tour breakout win, and you know, things are looking well in his game. 12th in driving accuracy, 7th greens in regulation, 7th in putting for the last, you know, the 10-week rolling. He's 13th on the tour in strokes gained tee to green for the year. There's a lot of really good things to be said for him.
He was 6th for total driving and 4th for ball striking at the BMW, which again are very nice stats around here. That kind of strokes gained off the tee also relates to total driving as well, because I'm seeing Stenson 1st, Horschel 1st, McIlroy 5th and Schauffele 10th in that BMW for total driving the outing before they won here. So if you're looking at this from a total driving perspective, McIlroy was 4th at the BMW. Rose was 2nd. Tony Finau was 1st. Bryson DeChambeau was 2nd. Fleetwood was 6th. So yeah, he fits like a glove. Patrick Cantlay was 7th. And Tiger was 5th. So that's a potential, you know, another angle in. I can see Fleetwood going extremely well this week.
Yeah, the course should suit, shouldn't it? It should be right up his alley.
Yeah, and he's loved over in the States. He really is. If he can get himself in the mix there, Yeah, they'll be supporting him, even though they'll be rooting against him in a couple of weeks' time.
And the fact that he hasn't played there, I think that's added a couple of points to his price. But we know that Xander won on debut. We know that Henrik Stenson won on course debut back in 2013. So it's more than achievable. You know, you don't have to have played hundreds and hundreds of rounds around here to win. So I think that's a decent angle. I really do. The two I've gone for, I'm gone for Bryson. I tell you what I do like about this tournament. If you look at it from a TPC Boston perspective, this is pretty uncanny. Snedeker was sixth at Boston the year he won. Stenson won it. Horschel was second. Rory McIlroy was first. And last year, Justin Thomas finished second in this. And I kind of think, you know, going down the stretch, he had half an eye on the FedEx Cup rather than on winning the tournament because he didn't need to. He won at Boston as well the year he finished second here. So if you extrapolate that and you can look at top seven finishers this year in Boston, we've got a scenario where I'm looking at the likes of DeChambeau, Justin Rose, Cameron Smith, Tony Finau, Matsuyama, and Bubba Watson and Dustin Johnson, who are in the top seven this year. So I've got Bubba already on board. And for me, DeChambeau, I just think 20-1 about DeChambeau in a field that's clearly no different to where he won at Ridgewood and where he won also at Boston. I just think that's a decent price. You know, he's actually a longer price than Tony Finau this week, which I, again, I'm seeing short 16-1 about Finau. I'm finding that difficult when I'm seeing DeChambeau at 20-1.
And who's the proven winner?
Who's been ice cold in contention the last month or so?
Gary Woodland. it's
Rafa Cabrera Bell.
Yeah.
This is it. So, you know, 20-1. I'm quite happy with that. For a guy that's won two of the three FedEx Cup playoff
He's quality, events. Isn't he? He's absolute quality, you can say that.
And he fits the bill, doesn't he? He eats par fives, decent on par fours, he's strategic, you know, the scientist. I can see him going very well. The third pick has been inspired by Paul Williams. I'll blame Paul for this one. And he's in such good nick at the moment, listeners. Why the fuck wouldn't you listen to him? So you might as well talk through him, Paul, because I know you're all over him like a rash.
Webb, yeah, I think he's, for me, he was the first player that I punted on for this, and you know, you and I talked about it after the back end of the BMW, and you know, for me, it just fits like a glove. If you're talking about a US Open champion, US Open type player who can, you know, he can hold himself together when, you know, you're on a tough course and grinding out pars. You know, Webb's been there and done it. You know, he's got that title to his name. You know, I know you talked about not needing hot incoming form, but sixth at the BMW is, you know, he's strong enough, I think.
Yeah, and it was backdoor, wasn't it? He was never in the heat of the battle.
Yeah.
It was that amazing final round he had when he was paired with Tiger Woods. They both shot 5 under 65s. And we've said this, Barry said it in the past, we all say it. Players take things from... for him to shoot the same score as Tiger Woods, 5 under 65 in the same pairing as him on the final day, I think he'll take a lot from that. A lot of confidence. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. A lot of confidence.
Yeah. You know, and there's a different type of pressure playing with Tiger, isn't there? You know, you're not just playing the golf course anymore. You're also playing, you know, the crowd. You're playing the man and the, you know, the whole circus that goes with it as well. So to you know, some players just fall apart, don't they? Some players just can't handle it.
Yeah, and he played beautifully.
Yeah, very strong. You know, you go back a little bit further, was his second at the Wyndham, you know, obviously won the Players. And again, you know, in terms of correlating types of courses that demand, a strong tee to green game, Bermuda greens, you know, a technical test, one that can't just be overpowered, one that can't, you know, that requires some strategy, then, you know, Sawgrass is a... There's a good correlation for this, I think.
Totally.
You know, and he's and you talked about his putting earlier. You know, he's clearly moved on from putting woes to being able to contend with some of the better putters out there. He's still not the best putter on tour by any stretch, but if he's hitting fairways and he's hitting greens, then he's I think he can contend in this kind of event for sure.
The other thing is, this is a quote that I put in my preview this week from Chris Kirk, and he said this just after he'd won at Boston. They said to him, he was in the top five of the FedEx Cup at the time. They said, what course correlates to this in your mind? And he's within seconds, Boston. Because with this golf course, you don't play many wedges. You're playing with mid irons into the greens, which is similar to Boston. And if you look at Webb Simpson, where's he won? He's won at Boston, and he was the 36-hole leader at Boston this year, and then he fell apart. But he has been showing some really positive signs. He's seventh this season for strokes gained putting. I mean, that is unbelievable. If I go back two seasons to 2016, I'm scrolling down, chaps. I'm scrolling. Webb Simpson, 177th out of 185. So in two seasons, he's turned it from 177 to 7th for strokes gained putting.
Yeah, that's literally upside down, isn't it?
Yeah.
Literally upside down.
So those are my three. Any other players we want to mention?
The only reason I can't back Webb is because I can't stand the guy.
That's fair enough, isn't it?
It all makes so much sense. I mean, this goes back to before he devastated me by beating Harrington at
Olympic Club.
Now look, Harrington kind of defeated himself a little bit, but I still put the blame fully on Webb. That's quite rational, I think you'll agree. I have one more pick, and he's at a very nice price for somebody who seems like the kind of guy that might have a major in him in his future. It's Patrick Cantlay. And I got him at 40-1, which is a really nice price. Not great last week, but did put in a pretty nice 65 in round two. But there's a lot of good things going for him this year. So in the rolling stats, he's 14th in driving accuracy, 2nd for greens in regulation, 17th for putting. But across the whole season, he's 4th in strokes gained tee to green. And I think he's won back in the Shriners in November, and just playing a tiny bit on the angle that he might be motivated to make a statement, having missed out on getting into the Ryder Cup team. And he wasn't fully in the conversation, but I think in his head he'll probably think he should have been there in the conversation. So playing a little bit on that angle too.
He's another one for the future, isn't he? He's another one that's going to get into teams further down the line.
He's a serious player, and
he tends to go better on the more technical courses as well. Riviera. He's had two decent runs at TPC Sawgrass, which is, Paul quite rightly, correlating course.
Yeah, for sure.
If you look at his form in the playoffs, 8th, 24th, 55th. But I tell you what, we were talking about that strokes gained off the tee, and we were talking about total driving. It's no surprise that I mentioned Cantlay in both of those at the BMW. So he fits like a glove as well.
His putting was absolutely atrocious at the BMW. So
67th of 69 for putting average.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean jack, because we know that can turn in a blink.
Absolutely. So happy to be on that at 40-1, and hopefully finish the season with a win of some sort.
Well, the decent each way places we get in this week, any of these guys at this kind of level, if you're talking top five, top six, depending where you placed your bet, you've got a fairly good chance of getting something back, I think.
Do you want to talk Portugal Masters, Paul? Because I know clearly a lot of listeners will have been ignoring the last 25, 35 minutes, and all they want to hear are the names that you're about to tell us.
Oh, no pressure
this. To be fair, Barry and I might as well not be on this podcast.
Yeah.
And as you all, both of you know, and everyone who's listening knows, these little runs of form that you get with golf punting soon disappear. So
ride the wave.
Yeah, absolutely. When it's good, be happy and enjoy it. When it's bad, remind yourself that these things can turn, and good times, hopefully, not too far away. Fingers crossed.
This and so, Barry, you know, Barry's saying he's on a bad run. He's the guy that picked out three of the four major champions this year.
Oh, I know. He's had a fantastic year, Barry. I think. I think he's just playing it down, really.
Yeah.
Recency bias. It's strongly against me.
So let's talk Portugal then. So we're off to Vilamoura again, which we've seen since 2007 when this event started, and the Victoria Golf Club over there on the Algarve. So the Arnold Palmer design, it's par 71. We've seen it quite a lot, haven't we? It's a lovely resort track, 7,146 yards. Low scoring, flat exposed, wide fairways, big greens. Really, for me, it's about avoiding the water, hit lots of greens, make lots of putts, get yourself down to this kind of 20 under level that tends to be in the vicinity of contention. Depending, on any given year, if it's a little bit windier, a little bit soft, a little bit firm, and then, you can get some variations in the winning score. But in the last few years, Lucas Beauregard won at 20 under last year, and generally you're getting that kind of number. You've gone as deep as 23 under when Andy Sullivan, I think it was, won at 23. Generally if you're in that kind of bracket, Sunday afternoon, you're going to be in with a shout. Now, as I say, some of it will depend on the conditions, and we are going to get decent conditions here this year. It's going to be hot and sunny. Wind maybe up to 10, 12 miles an hour in the afternoon. So what you tend to find here is you often get nice calm mornings and a little bit of wind picking up in the afternoons. But there's not likely to be anything serious here. So I'm anticipating that kind of 20 under bracket being where you want your player to be, as we've got coming into the last hour or so on Sunday, and see how they fare when push comes to shove over the final few holes.
I tell you what I've taken from your preview that I've handily had sent to me. When you're looking at, and this is what we said at the top of the show, Beauregard, he'd shown plenty of decent form at some nice events before winning here. Harrington, well, you don't need to talk about that. Andy Sullivan he'd won a couple of times in South Africa before winning this, hadn't he?
That's right.
Alex Leve, David Lynn. That, I think 2013 was the season he went really well in the States, wasn't it? And then he came over here and everyone's thinking, oh, he's a technical golf course, four under, five under. He goes and wins this at 18 under. That's a resort golf course, isn't it? But there's something
you've done
there.
Well to pick Lynn out, I think.
There's something in there, though, that shouts a little bit of quality. But I know that you're excited about it, and so should listeners, in terms of winning prices of this.
Well, it is. If you go back, I've got back to 2010 here. So 2010, Richard Green 50-1, Tom Lewis 100-1 in 2011. Larry was 66s the year after. David Lynn, you just talked about, was 80-1, despite having a decent year, as you said. Alex Levy 70-1. Sullivan was 50s. Harrington was 100-1. And we've seen with Harrington, when he comes back from the States, he can often just pop up in these events. Very nearly won the 3 weeks ago, didn't he? And then again was in contention last week as well. You can never quite write him off, can you? And Lucas was 66s last year. So going back to 2010, you've not got a winning price of under 50-1 here. And I think, often with these resort-style tests, and you often say see similar over on the PGA Tour as well, Steve, it's often drives a different type of winner, often drives a longer price, and it often comes down to who hits the most greens, who makes the most putts on the week, and that doesn't necessarily always translate to the bookies' favourites. I think when you look at the history of that, and you could get stuck with the top of the market. And, I've backed Lucas loads over the course of this. I've backed him loads full stop, but I've backed him quite a bit over the course of this season. And he's the defending champion. He's coming in off the back of three straight top tens. He was, lost in the playoff the last time out. He clearly loves this track. He got two consecutive top 12 finishes before winning last year. I was all over him last year, but I can't take him at 18-1 this year.
No.
Simply because the history there suggests it doesn't lend itself to that kind of winner. And we talked about trends being broken, and perhaps this is the week that the trend will be broken for this. But you got the likes of Lucas there at the 18s, you got Olsen at 16-1, the favourite, and you know, we've talked ad nauseum about backing Olsen or not backing Olsen at the short price. Because he just doesn't convert enough to justify those prices. Chris Wood, who, you know, arguably should have won last week. You know, thankfully he didn't. But you know, he had a healthy lead at one point on the back nine. You know, had a chance on the final green, didn't he? And overrun his putt, going for the win, as he said in his interview afterwards. But again, 18, you get a little bit of 20-1 about Chris Wood. Yeah, you know, I can't stomach that. Schwartz or Sergio's coming here for the first time, 22-1. It'd be fascinating to see how Sergio goes this week. You know, he could dispel a lot of, he could put to bed a lot of the conversations about his form if he was to go and win or seriously contend here. He misses the cut, and you know, the questions are going to be re-raised that were raised a week or so ago, aren't they? So. We'll see. And for me, it's the type of track where you've got to score heavily on the three par fives. You've got a reachable par four there. Most of the scoring is quite consistent for most of the players on the par five. So you tend to find a differentiator between the players that really contend and those that kind of also rounds tends to be how they perform the par fours here. Assuming they have kind of an average performance in the par fives during the course of the week. So I'm looking for decent players on par fours. Lucas last year coming into this, he'd been showing some fantastic form from a total driving perspective. I think if you're going to score heavily on the fours, you're going to score heavily on the par fives, which you've got to, you know, you've got to be up there with everyone else. Then you need to be hitting it long enough and straight enough to be able to give yourself chances in these scoreable holes. So coming in with some decent total driving stats is pretty strong, you know, pretty strong indicator in my opinion. And then you've got to be able to make a few putts when you get on the greens. You don't necessarily have to be the best putter in the world. Lucas isn't the best putter by any stretch, but when you hit, you know, 80-odd% of greens in regulation, putt yourself at 1.7 or thereabouts, then you're going to put yourself in the mix, I think. I've backed four, and actually, I haven't published my final preview, but these are the four I'm going to go with, because I've been around the houses with it a bit today, and I'm not going to go any further or any deeper with this, I don't think. And I'm sticking with the theory that we've talked about in terms of the winning score. I've not gone for anyone lower than 50-1, despite the temptation with some of the guys that are down there. Matt Wallace is playing. He's 33-1, you know, and he's about 10th favourite in this field. And you know, of the players that are there, he could easily go and win this again. You know, he pulled out of the last event through tiredness, fatigue, as he said. You know, he's come back out to play. There's no reason why he couldn't go and win this. But if history is a good indicator of what's going to happen here, then I suspect it is going to be a player a little bit further down the field. And so my first...
We're waiting, Paul. We're waiting. Come on.
I've all my bookies accounts open right now.
I know. He's got all 17 accounts. Oh, is it 13? 13 accounts open here, Paul.
Sadly, it looks like the battery is just about to go in this recording device I've got here.
I know who one of them is. I've already backed him, but anyway, go on.
Yeah. My favourite bet this week is Jordan Smith, who comes in with progressive form, 36th, 20th, 10th. The key for Smith, I think, is that he's sitting bang on number 60 in the race to Dubai. Mm. So you kind of get into this point of the season now where these players need to jostle for position to get themselves into the big money events at the back end of the season, and of course to the Dubai World Championship itself. And sitting 60th spot, he is bang on the bubble. So he needs to continue to perform. He needs to defend and improve that position over the course of the next few weeks. You look at his total driving over the last few weeks, and it's reminiscent, very strong, very similar to how Lucas came in last year. So his last three events read 6th, 20th, 1st in terms of total driving. 3rd for scrambling last week. But the key and the big thing with Jordan Smith is when he's not contending, you look at his putting stats and he's kind of putting at 1.88, 1.92, 1.93. the last three events, these three events where he's gone out and finished 36th, 20th, 10th, he's been putting at 1.75 or better. So when he's putting at 0.15, 0.2 better than his kind of his plodding average, then you know that he's in the kind of, this game's in the kind of state where he can seriously contend. So he's got his one win. His one win was against, was when he beat Alex Levy. Obviously, Alex Levy's won a, one of Portugal Masters in the past, which, you know, again, if you're kind of correlating different form from different events, then that this European opening win from last year from Smith, where he beat, beat Levy, may be a good indicator. We've talked about Matt Wallace's win record as well, but Smith's is, you know, is not far off the same kind of level, actually. Five wins altogether at all levels from 92 starts. That's, you know, that's pretty strong as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
So there's loads to like with him, I think. Loads to like.
Interesting, this August last year, don't forget, and what, and this is what we were saying about someone that's just shown a little bit of class. Don't forget, ninth at the PGA Championship in America last year. That was the event after he won the European Open.
Yep.
Now, there's something about the boy, isn't there? He's a quality, quality player, Jordan Smith.
Yeah, absolutely. There's, and when he's in this kind of ball striking, total driving, you know, and he's hitting the ball well from tee to green, which he is. He's, you know, he's been far stronger over the last few weeks, and he combines that with some decent form with a putter. Yeah, I think he can win lots of lots of decent tournaments, not necessarily small tournaments.
He was first. He was first of all round at the KLM Open and eighth for driving distance. He can bang it.
He can he can eat up the par fives. He can, you know, the par four, the drivable par four. You know, he can be scoring heavily on those holes, and you know, if he can make enough putts around the rest of the course, he can get to the kind of scoring level that that I think you need to contend here.
He's the he's the player I've backed. Yeah, definitely. I can see George.
The only thing with Smith is that he's playing this for the first time. But if you look, Tom Lewis won this on debut. Alex Levy won it on debut. It's a straightforward track, you know. If it's a tricked up track where you need the experience, having played it a few times, then sometimes you can look at these debutants and think, well, no, it's, you know, I can't quite see it. But
what do they say on the PGA Tour? It's right in front of you. It's all in front of you. So that's not an issue, is it?
No, not for me. So Smith, I've also gone for Nacho Oliveira, who's another one who's been banging on the door. And he's banging on the door louder and louder this season, definitely. So he's a four-time winner on the Challenge Tour. And if you go back to his best performance on the European Tour, he lost a playoff to Wang at the Hassander Trophy in Morocco, in Rabat. And who won this year in Rabat? Alex Levy. So again, if you're kind of trying to build this kind of little network of events and you know, results that could interlock, interact in some shape or form, then I think there's potentially a way to look at that there. Third at the Spanish Open behind John Rahm. Fourth at Crans behind Lucas Beauregard and Matt Fitzpatrick. Obviously Lucas won last year, so again, you know, some correlating form there as well. The other thing with Nacho is that he comes in with two consecutive top tens on this track, and he hits a lot of greens anyway. He's hitting a lot of greens at the moment. But when you look at his performances here, he's finished 21st, missed cut, 9th, 7th from his four starts. And three of those, the three where he's made the weekend, he's putted at 1.64, 1.62, 1.68 on this track. He loves the greens here.
He was 1.66 fifth for putting average at European Masters 2 hours.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So he's hitting greens. He's found a bit of form with his putter, and he's going back to a track where he has historically really performed well on the greens.
I'll be boosting him in the morning. Then.
and it's not the longest. He's certainly long enough, but he's not the longest of players. But sixth for total driving here last year. I think it suits his eye. I think the greens, he absolutely loves it. Being a Spaniard, he's not, he's just hopping over the border, isn't he, effectively?
He looks like the kind of player to me that can actually manage his game off the tee, because he can be in the top 10 for driving distance, and then if it's a course that doesn't suit, he's in the top 40 for driving distance. So he clearly isn't a driver addict off the tee.
No. No, and he's a big lad, you know, he's a big, powerful lad. I think you're right. I think he just he reins it in a little bit to ensure that he finds enough fairways, finds enough greens, and gives himself opportunities to make birdies. I like it a lot, actually. I like that bet quite a lot this week. And finally, I've gone for two outsiders. Jonathan Jigger Thompson, who's been he's been impressing quite a lot over the last few weeks, hasn't he? You know, he's another debutant, but as I said before, I'm not entirely concerned about that. And, you know, if you look at him, what he's been doing, was he 12th last week? He lost out in the playoff, didn't he? So he was one of the four in the playoff at the...
Made in Denmark.
When Wallace won.
Yeah.
You know, he's getting closer and closer. And he putts well. He drives the ball a long way. There's a lot to like about him coming to this particular track.
And didn't you say he's well outside the 110 for his card next year? So he needs to keep performing well.
Yeah, so he got through Q school last year, finished 18th, so it gave him a status at least. But he's currently sitting at 143rd, so he needs a big week, and he needs a big week soon. And clearly over the last few weeks, he has been producing some decent paychecks, but he needs to get another one or two under his belt to push himself over that line for the end of the season. He was 25th here last year, and you know he'd been playing on the Euro Pro Tour up to that point, and this was only his second start on the European Tour proper, and he was just getting the odd invite here and there. But 25th was how he fared last year, and I get the feeling he's the kind of player that can continue to improve. And I thought 150-1 was a mad price on that, to be honest. And the final one is the Frenchman Julien Gurrier, who's another big hitter. Another player who's done well. He's got a couple of Challenge Tour wins under his belt, but he's really started to show some form on the European Tour this year. So third in Oman, sixth at the Sicilian Open. Both of those tracks near the coast, and clearly we're not far from the coast where we are this week either. Third in Madeira in 2014 was his previous best performance on the European Tour. So again, not a million miles away from where we are this year. Started with a 65 at Cairns, closed with a 66. You know, there's snippets of form there that suggest his game's not far away. 66 in the third round at the KLM Open last week as well. So lots of little hints that he's doing okay. And when I've dug through his performances in the past, putting on these bent grass with a little bit of power, as we've got here, greens tends to be where he excels most when he gets the putter going. So I quite like that again at 150-1. He's 92nd in the race to Dubai, so his card should be just about safe. But again, as we saw with Wu last week, who was 90th going into the event, these guys have got a bit to fight for if they want to play in these big bucks events at the end of the season. So it can bring the best out of some of these guys. So fingers crossed it's one of these this week.
Who are you on, Barry? Who do you fancy?
All of those.
I thought so.
Yeah. Compelling cases. I'm emptying the bank account. I haven't gone too deep into my research on this, but I have picked one so far. Another Frenchman is Benjamin Hébert.
Mm.
Who was second for greens in reg last week, trending nicely with 24th and 11th the last 2 weeks.
Very consistent.
23rd and 11th, yeah. And he has a top 10 here 2 years ago. So I've a small question mark in my head over whether he can get to that deep a level of scoring required to win it. But I'm ready to be surprised. So what I did do.
I've got him down on my my sheet here with a big DK next to it. So for me to include him in my DraftKings teams once I get the pricing for that, he's that kind of consistent player who can score heavily, I think, in terms of the fantasy golf side of it. So
yeah. So I decided to take the extra places rather than the price. I could have got him at 66s, but I took him at 50-1 at 8 places. So, and yeah, look, if If he wins, amazing, happy days. I won't be worried about the few points I sacrifice.
I'm all over Smith and Nacho, based on Paul's confidence. The one that jumps out at me that's a big price for a player of his quality is Ross Fisher. I'm seeing 66-1, and yeah, he's playing terribly. But I've seen, you know, you look at Fisher's record, he can play terribly, and all of a sudden he'll get to a low-scoring event like the Dunhill Links, and he'll finish second. He finished second here in 2012, third here in 2008. Little punt to nothing there. We know he's a quality player. It's just, I think now this Ryder Cup rubbish has all ended in his mind and he hasn't qualified. I think that played in his head for most of the season. But he is the sort that can go very low on these resort-style golf courses.
Yeah, it certainly did play in his mind. I saw a few interviews where he was talking about, trying too hard, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely.
It affects your game. He was awful last week. Started with 77 in Holland, and just inevitably missed a cut from that point. But he's clearly better than that. So
this is it. I mean, last year, missed cut, 31st, missed cut. He then went to the Alfred Dunhill, second at the Italian Open. So it just needs the putter to click, something to click, and he's right on it.
Yeah, I remember that stretch because he finished second in Abu Dhabi as well.
That's
at the start
right.
of the year.
Yeah, he was one of the best players in the world at that point. He's just playing super golf.
Just couldn't quite get over the line, could he? But he was producing some decent rounds.
He's the kind rounds. That would win this, and everyone would go, "Oh, bloody Ross Fisher, who's playing awfully," but 66-1. Mm-hmm. Now, I know that we're running out of time. I just wanted to highlight, great week of golf, Tour Championship, Portugal Masters. They're also playing the Web.com Tour Championship over in the States. So the promotion, they get promoted into the PGA Tour. And I just had a quick glance at it this morning. Last year won by Jonathan Bird, and we know with Jonathan Bird, Bermuda grass monster, played as one at Capella and the like. Sam Saunders was runner-up, and also, I'm trying to remember the guy's name, Sean Stefani. And all of them were in desperate need. So Bird was 66th in the rankings on the web.com. Saunders was 24th, so 24th out of 25, pretty much on the bubble. And we also had Stefani was way out of the rankings. So I've gone for three players this week who, in my mind, I categorise as players that can go very low, players that are great on Bermuda grass greens, and players that have thrown just a little bit across these three Web.com Tour events before we got to this final. I've gone for Aaron Baddeley at 40-1, who's actually hitting some greens, and we know that he can play well on Bermuda. He won the Barbasol a couple of years ago on the PGA Tour. I've gone for Fabian Gomez, the Argentine, who has got two PGA Tour victories on Bermuda grass and was in the top 10 last week. And I've also gone, and Paul will love this, I've gone for Matt Every. If there's not a Bermuda grass monster, Matt Every is the archetype of that. Two wins in Florida, of course, at Bay Hill. Also a second at the Disney event a few years ago. 150-1 is available. I got him boosted on Ladbrokes to 190-1. I've also gone first round leader, 125-1. He was in the top 10 two events ago at the DAP Championship.
Showing
a bit of form. Even last week, he was 18th at halfway, 23rd after 54 holes at the Boise. So those are my three that I'm going for at the Web.com Tour Championship. Just to throw a couple of penneth worth at that. Anything else to add, chaps? Or should we go and spend time with our clubs and families?
No, all good, I think. All good. Best of luck, chaps.
It was great to be back this week. Thank you for your time, Barry. Thank you for your time, Paul. We will be back again early next week with a specific special on the Ryder Cup. So we look forward to that. Thanks for your time, and we will see you again soon. Cheers.